32. Less than a half hour after Maddie and Brewster delivered Magnus Rex into the welcoming arms and eager fists of his would-be victims, all of the wizards of Europe had reconvened at the former site of the Golden Castle of Camelot. The city no longer existed. In its place, a vast plain of hard, compacted rubble stretched for acres in every direction, flanking both sides of the Thames, which flowed gray with residual stone dust washing away from its banks. Where there had been hills, there were flattened mounds. Where there had been mounds, there were bumps. The sharp-edged crater left behind when the castle exploded was now a deep depression, with indistinct eroded sides and a sparkling yellow sheen from the flecks of pulverized gold mixed in with the gravel. At the bottom of the glittering pit, the wizard stood in a circle, surrounding the accused. Magnus Galka and Magnus Rex were both chained, spread-eagled, on big, round, slowly spinning theatrical knife-throwing targets. Gilbert and Sid had provided the targets, and they stood in the circle of wizards alongside Maddie, Brewster, Britt the Elder, and Britt the Younger. The citizens of London looked down from the rim of the crater. Thanks to the giant faces in the clouds and the amplified conversations during the battle, every person in the city knew exactly who had tried to kill them and who had saved them. Some pointed out that both of those groups could be described simply as wizards again. But the overwhelming majority understood that the tally had been two wizards trying to kill versus more than 20 trying to save, which was encouraging, even if the fact that the more than 20 had nearly failed was not. Philip turned his head to look beyond several wizards toward the Brits. Martin muttered, "Don't you think you should skip the unpleasant preliminaries and get on with it?" Philip said,
"I will, I just want to say hi to the Brits first."
Gwen said, "You saying hi to Britt the Younger is the unpleasant preliminary Martin's trying to get you to skip." Philip frowned at Gwen, then cleared his throat, forced an oversized smile onto his face, and said,
"Britt, Brits, it's lovely of you, both of you, to attend."
Britt the Younger stared straight ahead. Britt the Elder glanced back at him with a bare hint of a smile and said, "These two idiots you're about to punish tried to kill my godchildren and the rest of you. My godchildren defeated them and saved the rest of you. It felt like I should be here to celebrate Maddie and Brewster's triumph and your embarrassment." Philip worked hard to keep his smile from fading.
"I see. Thanks for coming, in any case. And Britt the Younger, it's especially good to see you."
Britt the Younger looked at Philip just long enough for him to see the bags under her eyes and the anger in them.
"I'm the same person as her, Philip. I'm here for the same reason, and that isn't to talk to you. Frankly, if I'd known she was coming, I probably wouldn't have. It was necessary for me to be here for the twins, but I don't think I needed to be here twice. That's more times than anyone else is attending."
Britt the Elder said, "Oh, hush, Britt. Don't look at it like we're attending twice. Think of it as one of us being here for Brewster and the other for Maddie."
"Great," Britt the Younger said. "So now we're playing favorites? We've each picked a twin as ours to root for. I don't like that at all."
"Oh, nonsense. We aren't playing favorites. We're not really we. We're I. And if I am playing favorites, I'm doing it twice in equal measure, so it evens out."
"Yeah. I get it, because I'm just an extension of you. Do you not understand how belittling that is? You've made me the least important character in my own life story."
"That's silly. You are not the least important character. You're the most important character. Me."
Britt the Younger growled.
"I'm leaving. Sorry, kids."
Philip said,
"No, no, please don't. I'll start the meeting. It'll only take a minute."
"In fact," Martin said, "it would already be done if Philip hadn't postponed it to talk to the two of you."
Philip stepped forward, muttered,
"Situi irasala decunu,"
then cleared his throat to make sure the voice amplification spell had triggered properly. Then he rapped his staff on the compacted stone.
"People of London, the city formerly called Camelot, again, We wizards must apologize. Two of our number have made a great many grievous errors. And as has happened before, you have suffered for it. I give you my word, as newly re-elected chairman of the wizards, that we will rebuild the city, every road, alley, and building, better than it was before. Except for one. The Golden Castle will not be rebuilt. That land will be returned to the people, to do with what you wish. Now, we wizards will confer with the accused. I will let you know when we are ready to pronounce our judgment and describe their punishment.
Philip deactivated the amplification spell and walked up to the Magnuses, still slowly spinning on their knife-throwing targets.
You two have anything to say for yourselves?
Yeah,
Magnus Rex said.
Come over closer so I can whisper it to you.
Or so you can try to throw up on me.
Eh, you're the one who made us spin, which is just mean, man.
Philip said,
true.
Are you gonna stop the spinning then?
No.
Magnus Galka said,
I'd suggest that you consider punishing us separately. I mean, yeah, I froze a bunch of you, but he...
And you unleashed 10 plagues on us.
Well, I called them plagues, but they were more like jokes, really.
Head lice. You gave us all head lice. There's nothing funny about head lice.
Yeah, but I wasn't serious.
You had a title ready. The 10 Plagues of Magnus. People don't give titles to things they aren't serious about. People don't just pop out to the corner store and decide to name their trip A Date with Destiny and Doritos.
Magnus Galka laughed.
That's really funny, Philip. You always have been funny and wise. Hey, maybe as my punishment, I could work as your assistant. You could give me menial tasks and insult me all the time.
No, you'll both be interested to hear that we've actually already decided on your punishment. You're to be banished,
Magnus Rex said.
What a surprise. Punishing us the same way you punish everyone. Every time you punish anybody. Never saw that coming.
Philip said,
Actually, we've added some new wrinkles, and I think you'll be pleased. You'll be sent back to your original time, the late 90s, roughly. You're only a couple of years removed from each other, so we split the difference. And you'll have your magnetic fields amplified so that you can never again use any device that involves an integrated circuit, preventing you from using a computer to find the file and ever return here. The difference is in where we are sending you. We banished Jimmy to life as a foreign vagrant in South America, and it only made him more determined to return. We sent Todd straight to prison for life. He found a way back too, and was quite miffed. With you two, we're going to try sending you somewhere that isn't actually all that bad. You're losing all of your magic, your invulnerability, and your wealth. That's punishment in and of itself. The idea is to send you somewhere unpleasant, but not so much so that it makes you psychotic.
Where?
Magnus Rex asked.
You two settled in Norway by choice, right? So I assume you like the cold, weather with some teeth, the land of ice and snow and all that.
Magnus Galka said.
Yeah?
Good. Magnus. Other Magnus. I hereby sentence you to live out your lives in the greater Miami Metroplex. Not Miami proper. Your magnetic fields will make living in any densely populated area impossible. No, we've set you up with a trailer on the outskirts of town. It's a nice trailer. I believe it's what they call a double wide. How American does that sound? We've given you a car, one old enough to still function for you. And we've even purchased a business for the two of you to operate. running airboat tours for cruise ship patrons.
Airboats? Magnus Rex asked. Those flat ones with the big fans on the back? Those are pretty cool. I could have a lot of fun driving those around.
You could, Philip said. But you won't. They have electronic ignitions and CB radios, which won't work if you're anywhere near them. You'll have to hire some kids to do the piloting, while you two work the stall. Take people's information, hand out life vests, scrape barnacles off the hulls. Heck, you can even take the payments, as long as they pay cash. Or you take their credit card with one of those, metal slidey things.
Magnus Gulka said,
So you're sending us somewhere hot and shark-infested to do crap work and watch other people have fun?
Yes, but look at the bright side. You wanted to be in charge, and now you will be. In charge of magic carpet airboat tours in fabulous Shark Valley, Florida.
Shark Valley?
Magnus Gulka asked.
Yes,
Philip said.
But the name's a bit misleading. It isn't really much of a valley. More of a big, flat swamp.
1 week later, from Brewster and Maddie's point of view, class let out for the day. Students flooded the halls, talking about what they intended to do with their weekend or what they had just done with their week. The sixth period drama class spilled out of the auditorium, spread out and mixed into the general hallway traffic. Among them, Brewster Banks and a petite blonde girl walked a bit slower than the traffic, concentrating more on their conversation than on getting anywhere.
Your audition piece was great, Brewster, the blonde girl said. I didn't know you could sing.
Thanks, Abby. I didn't either. I just figured I had nothing to lose by giving it a shot.
They should make you the lead.
I doubt it. If I'm lucky, maybe I'll get to play one of the dads. But it's not a big deal if I don't. I mean, the class is putting on the play, so we're all gonna get to do something, even if we're not on stage.
Yeah, there aren't many parts to go around. It's such a weird little musical, The Fantastics.
Abby slowed as they reached an intersection. She nodded down the hall to their left.
You wanna go hang out at the gym?
Brewster said,
nah,
and kept walking, motioning for Abby to come along, which she did.
The play's super old-fashioned, I agree, but I think it's kind of cool. I like the lesson they teach the daughter.
That men lie and manipulate girls?
No, most girls know that. I think the real lesson they teach her is that if you focus on things you think you want but don't have, you might not notice how amazing what's right in front of you is.
Brewster smiled at Abby, who blushed and looked at the floor. Maddie sat in her chair, drumming her fingers and looking pleased with herself. Mrs. Hackett sat behind her desk, drumming her fingers and looking displeased with Maddie.
Matheson, would you mind explaining what happened with today's weekly exam?
I prefer to be called Maddie.
Matheson! Explain yourself.
Maddie widened her eyes in a manner that made her look as if she wanted to appear innocent, but knew she couldn't quite pull it off.
What do you mean, Mrs. Hackett? I thought I did well on the quiz.
You didn't do well on the quiz. You aced it. You got every question right. You even spelled Hermann Göring correctly. You're the only one in the class. Everyone else forgot an N or added an E, and most did both. You even placed the umlaut correctly.
I did well. That's good, isn't it? I should think that as my teacher, you'd be pleased.
I am pleased. I've always known you're smart, but I'm also deeply suspicious because I know that you are immature and devious. Last week, you were willfully choosing to flunk my class. This week, you're suddenly my best student. I want to know why. What changed? What's your game?
Maybe I was inspired by your pep talk last week.
Mrs. Hackett stared at her. Maddie said,
I thought about it, and I realized that getting into a fight with you was pointless.
Because there was no way for you to win.
Maddie laughed, then stopped herself. Sorry, that was rude. I can see why you'd think that. But no, it's not whether or not I knew I could win that put me off. I realized that I'm going to be out of this class in just a few months. After that, odds are I won't be in one of your classes again. And even if I am, I'll leave this school in a couple of years. By the time I'm 20, I'll barely remember this conversation. When I'm 30, I may not even remember your name. I'm probably going to have some real problems during my life, but frankly, you aren't one of them. It's not that I don't think I can beat you, Mrs. Hackett. I've just decided you're not worth the effort.
Mrs. Hackett stared at Maddie for several seconds. Maddie stared back without blinking. Mrs. Hackett said,
I should be angry at you for insulting me, but I'm not. Knowing to fight the really important battles and let the petty stuff slide is an important lesson, and you've figured it out a lot younger than most.
Maddie said,
I guess it's a testament to your teaching methods.
That evening, Gwen called out, Dinner! Maddie walked down the hall from her bedroom while Brewster came up the stairs from the rec room. Both stepped into the kitchen and stopped short, seeing the table set as usual, but with no sign of any food present. Gwen was already seated at the table in front of an empty plate. Maddie asked,
Where's
dinner?
Martin asked from the kitchen. He pulled an almost empty 2-liter bottle of Dr. Pepper from the refrigerator and closed the door. The dim lighting, clean appliances, and total lack of any aromas suggested that no food had been prepared in the kitchen any time in the recent past.
See, that's the thing. For the last few days, we've been living life the way we always have, mostly out of habit and for stability's sake.
Martin walked to the dining room table.
But tonight, your mother said something very wise. What was it you said again, Gwen?
This is stupid.
Exactly.
Martin began pouring Dr. Pepper into Gwen's empty glass. Despite the fact that there had been only an inch of fluid in the bottom of the bottle, a healthy stream poured out, filling the glass. When Martin tipped the bottle upright again, the same tired-looking inch of brown fluid puddled in its base.
And it was stupid. We were doing all this crap to hide our use of magic when there's nobody to hide it from anymore.
The twins sat quietly for a moment, thinking. Brewster pointed at the bottle.
Why is it almost empty?
Martin swung the bottle around gently.
It's a lot lighter this way.
Gwen smiled.
Also, we knew that if the bottle was full, you might try to use it, and then you could discover that it's bottomless. If we made it practically empty, though, you'd never touch it. Nobody wants a third of a glass of pop, but nobody wants to waste it by throwing it out either.
Martin sat down next to Gwen.
Now that you two know what's what, we can just conjure up dinner with magic.
Instead of cooking,
Brewster said. Martin shook his head.
Instead of pretending to cook as a cover for using magic.
Gwen said,
Forza, quiggero.
Every light in the kitchen came on. Sounds of sizzling and bubbling came from the stove, and the air filled with the smell of baking bread and browning meat. Gwen said,
Forza, quiggero, stop.
The kitchen lights all switched off, as did the sounds and smells.
And because we don't have to pretend to cook,
Martin said,
that means we can each have whatever we want.
Martin produced his sequined wizard hat as casually as if he'd simply picked it up off the table. He reached in and pulled out a burrito.
I lived off these when Philip was training me. Would you like one, Gwen?
No, thanks. I know how often you wash your hat. She produced her own hat and pulled out a piece of grilled salmon and a salad arranged artfully on a white plate.
You just pull food out of your hats?
Maddie asked.
Yeah, that's how most wizards do it. How did you get food when you were at Gilbert and Sid's?
Brewster said, Gilbert cooked for us. Martin and Gwen both looked mildly surprised. Martin said,
Huh, to each his own. Still, I bet if you look in your top hats, they have a few dishes programmed in for when he doesn't feel like going to the trouble.
Maddie and Brewster both performed the showy little flourish that summoned their hats, along with their capes, canes, and gloves. They poked around inside the hats, peering in at the text interface for some time, before Maddie said,
Found it. It's a submenu under other than biological necessities. Gwen muttered, I can understand why you didn't look there before. Brewster said,
I see it. Huh. Toad in the hole? Eaten mess? Bubble and Squeak? Rumble-de-thumps? Spotted Dick? What is all this stuff?
British food, Gwen said.
Yeah,
Martin said through a bite of his burrito.
The English put more effort into naming their dishes than they do into cooking them.
What kind of thing did Gilbert cook for you? Maddie pulled a plate of fish and chips out of her hat. Mostly big piles of fried meat. Gwen said, you know, I bet that was really good. Martin said,
yeah, they probably call it a hedge heap or something like that. Why can't they name things sensibly like we Americans do?
Gwen said, I don't know. Hey, would anybody else like a glass of Dr. Pepper? Brewster followed his sister's lead and went with the fish and chips until he could spend some time researching what the other listed dishes actually were. The four of them ate in relative silence for a while. Then, as the plates grew empty, conversation resumed.
So,
Martin asked,
what do you want to do tonight? It's Friday. None of us needs to be up early tomorrow, and we have all of human history at our disposal. What say we go see Star Wars in the theater the night it premiered?
Brewster said, I don't know. I think instead of just watching a movie, I'd rather see an actual historic event. Martin's voice became low and serious.
The premiere of Star Wars was a historic event.
Gwen put her hand on Martin's and said, how about we go watch the Apollo moon launch? Brewster said,
yeah, that sounds good.
Maddie smiled.
I think I'd rather go watch the Apollo moon landing.
Martin pointed at Maddie, excitedly snapping his fingers.
Yes, that! We do that! Yeah! Airtight, force field, pressurized, and temperature controlled. There's no reason we can't.
Gwen said, no reason except that the astronauts would see us. There's no place to hide on the moon. We'd stick out like a sore thumb. Maddie and Brewster looked at each other. Brewster asked,
think Gilbert and Sid would mind?
Probably not, if we invite them along.
What are you talking about? Gwen asked. Brewster said,
we know a spell that would be able to keep us hidden from the astronauts, but I'll have to check with the guys before we show you.
While he does that, Maddie said, I'll teach you about a useful device called a periscope.
This has been an Audible Originals production of The Vexed Generation, written by Scott Meyer, performed by Luke Daniels. Executive producers David Blum, Steve Feldberg, and Mike Charzik. Editorial producer Steve Feldberg. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2019 by Scott Meyer. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.